This girl, she told me, the bigger your bag is, the bigger your fear is. Like, quote that really hit me. It's so true. It was just like, okay, what if? Or just in case, you know? And I really felt like I was in my essence. Like, I felt so much love from everywhere. And like, it's just like, you're literally like in the middle of kind of nowhere. And these are people that you will never see again, possibly. Just really feeling like a child and just being really just authentic to myself. And that felt really liberating and freeing. Trying to go as slow as possible. And we were stopping like every 5 minutes around, like, because we kind of didn't want it to end, I think.
Welcome one more time to El Camino People, the podcast. Today with you, your host, Jose Maria, and today we embark in this extraordinary journey about the Camino de Santiago and the connections. And one of the things we've been seeing lately in the last years is a huge increase in the number of Korean people that is coming to Santiago. And sometimes, you know, we as Spaniards, we ask ourselves, why is the Camino that have such a call for people from all over the world? You know, people with America, they have the connection with the movie The Way, some people from Germany for the book. But why Koreans? You know, this is such a, from a long distance, totally, you know, the religion, the connection, the language is so different. But today we're going to be able to dwell a little bit and to go farther into that connection with our friend. This is a long story. We met in Fitur last year and it was a pleasure to find someone. Hi, Chen. So nice to meet you again.
Hello.
Such a long time. It seems like it was yesterday and we met almost 1 year ago.
Exactly, like a year ago, more or less. Well, like, yeah, 11 months ago.
Now, today is the 27th of December of 2023. This will be released next year. But we met in Fitur, and you were working in Fitur for Japan or for the Korea?
Korea.
The Korean stand.
Yeah, the Korean stand.
And so was, you are... Sorry.
No, it was such a coincidence because... it was right after, more or less right after I finished the Camino, and then you just came by, you were mingling around, and then I was like, oh, and then we started talking about the Camino, and I was like, oh, I just did the Camino, and you were like, oh, I do the Camino, and so, yeah, it was like a instant connection there.
Well, the ones that don't know, Fitur is one of the biggest tourism world fairs, and it's the biggest one in Spain. It's a huge set of buildings, and we have this event that happens during 5 days in January. So, you know, the Japan and the Korea, there are like thousands of people working there, thousands of visitors. And suddenly here we are. I was asking, you know, for more information about Korea, the Jeju Island Trail and all these connections. And suddenly I met this girl and I just walked the Camino de Santiago. I'm like, what the heck? How in the world is that possible that, you know, with the probably I'm like, if you do, there's more than a million people going in all the days that the fair is there. So what are the chances of me meeting you? This is the Camino.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like life throws the dots at you.
Always, as we always say, in the Camino provides. And, you know, one more time is one of those little things that if you believe in the Camino, you know that sometimes things happen for a reason. So tell us a little bit about you, because what the heck is, you know, a Spaniard or Korean doing in Fitur, suddenly walking the Camino Santiago? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so to explain a bit about my background, I was born in Korea, and then when I was 2 years old, I went to Salamanca because my dad studied there. And then like 3 years after, so when I was five, I went back to Korea, and then I was there until I was seven. And then my dad decided to go back to Spain, but this time Barcelona, because he used to work for the government in Korea. Okay. And he was in like the Latin America kind of like exchange department faculty. Anyway, and he always had like this calling for like Spanish culture. And so I went back to Spain, but Barcelona when I was seven. And then at some point, again, we had to go back to Korea for his work. But then my dad just like decided to quit and he was like, I'm in love with Spain, so I'll just stay here. And yeah, so I just like ended up growing up here. And the Camino, I did it because, well, I graduated. I had graduated in 2020.
We'll go on the Camino later. But so you grew up in Korea, then you moved to Spain. Do you have any memories from your first years in Spain, in Salamanca?
Oh, I do. I do have like very brief faint memories. Obviously, like not like super clear, but I do remember some very random things. Like I remember this like with like a neighbor from the top floor, he got like a bunch of like lobsters or crabs and he put it in like the bathtub, and me and like their daughter, we played with the lobsters in the bathtub. I don't know, just like, yeah, lovely random memories. So I have funny. Yeah,
so by the time you speak Spanish already, do you speak Spanish at home? Do you keep the Korean at home all the time? Or
Actually, like, I prefer, like, my Korean and my English is more fluent than my Spanish because I tend to use more Korean and English day-to-day life. Like, with my family in my house, it's 100% Korean. And I have a lot of international friends. So I only really learned Spanish until I got to university. And I'd say my Spanish is good, you know, it's not like...
It is amazing. For the ones that don't know, we were talking in Spanish, and her Spanish is amazing, but she preferred to do the interview in English. Yeah. So, but we will get a shorter one in Spanish. So that's amazing. I'm like, that's one of the things, you know, that I love about multicultural and living abroad. I'm like the learning of the languages, the connections and everything. Mm-hmm. But you always felt Korean. You felt like a Korean living in Spain.
That's actually interesting because, you know, that I feel like every immigrant always has that like identity crisis. Like, where am I from? Mm-hmm. Where do I belong?
Yeah, I'm a Spaniard or not.
Exactly. And how do I answer to people that I meet? And now, like, I was in Japan a month ago, and after like 1 year of traveling, I find myself that I say that in the heart, I'm 100%, like 1,000% Korean. But in the way that I think, it's very Spanish or very Westernized or European.
I love that the way you say percent, I'm like the go there, so that the Spanish in you trying to pop out of your mouth. Because also, like, you live in Barcelona, really, really town, you know, and Barcelona is a Catalonia, they feel really Catalan. So the power of belonging to a place is really strong over there. So for you being in a place, I'm like, always people will ask you, I'm like, where are you from? Or what? No, I guess that will be the first question that when they saw you, like, okay, where are you from? And you have a perfect Spanish, perfect Catalan, also perfect English and perfect Korean. And like, okay, what is going on here?
Yeah, but... I think also, though, it's interesting. I think the sense of, like, belonging to, like, or, like, a strong feeling attachment to a culture, it's very similar between the Catalans living in Catalonia and, like, Catalan culture and Korean culture. I feel like some other, like, countries or cultures, the sense of, like, national identity isn't really, like, a big part of the personal identity, whereas... I think for Koreans, but I think especially for me, it's like a really big part. So it's something that I can relate to the Catalan people, I think.
That's amazing. So then you come to Spain, you live in Salamanca, go back over there, go back to Spain, and then live in Catalonia. But when did the Camino pop up in your life? How did you find out about the Camino de Santiago?
Well, the first time that I heard about it was when I did it, because I didn't really have much choice. I was 14, and I think it was when my brother was like graduating, or he was kind of like having this era of his life where he was still navigating his paths. And so he decided to do the Camino from the beginning, from And so then my whole family was like, okay, then we'll come with you. But it wasn't like from the beginning, because they obviously had work. I had school, high school, middle school. So that was the first time, and
so your brother was doing the whole Camino as a thing, and then you joined him in the middle?
Yeah, so me and my dad, we joined him in Astorga, and then my mom joined him in Sarria. So we ended the Camino all together, but we all started at different points.
I think that's one that we're going to have to interview the whole family to get, you know, this is going to be like a different movie. What do you think from the Camino, from the perspective of a 14-year-old, your brother that suddenly, you know, he's enjoying the Camino by himself, Hamira Camino family, and suddenly your little daughter, I'm like, your little sister and your dad come into your Camino. I'm like, never did that one before.
It could be a movie, honestly, yeah.
It can be a movie. I'm like, right now, there's a lot of Camino movies popping out. I'm like, I can see a movie. So how your brother find out about the Camino, do you know, or was something?
Well, even by that time, Camino was very popular amongst Koreans, and like before you mentioned, like all the fame that is around Camino between the Koreans, and My dad, he would always explain that there was like this TV show, and in Korea, the whole media presence is very prominent in people's lives, like K-drama, K-pop, you know, like it's like what they do in their lifestyle. Like, it's not like some, okay, that's celebrity and that's my life. No, no, no. It's like the part of culture, you know, like the celebrity life and everything. And I think at some point there was a lot of reality TV shows streamed where like these famous people would do the Camino Santiago. And so that's why it gained like a lot of popularity. And yeah, it still continues, I guess. And like word by word, I mean, Korea is also a very small country. So if one thing is trending, it like basically spreads through the whole country.
I think that's the biggest difference with Koreans, not that if you saw, you know, an influencer or someone that is popular doing something, everybody wants to do the same, no? Yeah. If you have the same haircut or you said here in Spain, you know, we have different, you follow different trends. Yeah. Trying to do something is not that easy, no? But I think Korea is more trendy, the whole thing of following, you know, figures, no?
Yeah, definitely.
And also in Korea, you have the first, I think, Korea kind of like connection with the Camino was a book written by a journalist that did the Camino, and then they started the kind of like the Juje Island and everything. But then the big thing was the K-pop band doing the Camino de Santiago, no?
K-pop band did Camino de Santiago?
Yes. Really? I didn't know that.
No.
Because
who? That's crazy.
I think it was G-O-D.
Oh,
I thought it was BTS, but I know it's G.O.D.
Wow.
This one in 2000. But I think the BTS or someone else did it. Okay, here. Yeah. Okay, let me have a...
I had no idea. Which one.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, G.O.D. G.O.D. was the one that did the Camino de Santiago. There was a documentary. Kind of, well, more like a, as you say, you know, a reality... What was the life in the Camino and blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
And I know that Mina Sean after that thought that, you know, maybe do a more Camino to talk about the Camino. And that's when she released the book and the documentary that she just made.
Mm-mm-mm.
So why Koreans are so in love with Spain? Something that is so different than, because I'm like, if you compare, you know, Korean, I'm like culture and everything is so different than Spain.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is that the huge connection?
Well, every time Koreans talk about Barcelona or Spain, I think their first impression is like the different pace in life. You know, in Korea, mm-hmm. it's always like go, go, go. It's kind of like the city doesn't sleep, or yeah, there's not much like kind of moments of just like fresh air. Whereas in Barcelona, at least when I walk around, you can see just people just like going for a walk and the pace.
Mingling, just doing nothing.
Yeah, the rhythm is different, and I think that they find that really refreshing. But also, I think people connect a lot through with food.
Okay.
Food is something that Koreans say they don't really struggle with, whereas in other countries, they might.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's also, maybe this is silly, but I think there has something to do with like the geography, because the Korea is also, like, Korea is also the peninsula. Spain is also kind of like the peninsula. And I think the characteristics of both cultures are quite similar. Like, I would compare, like, the Germans and the Japanese more, like, a bit more reserved, a bit more, like, like structured, maybe. Whereas I think Koreans are, like, in between the Japanese and the Chinese, no? Like,
more open, more European, no? I would say they are a more European nation, no? Maybe.
Yeah,
and
maybe.
Also, you know, I know a little bit about Korean, but I know that it's all about the food, the sharing of the food, you know, I think that would relate a lot with the Spaniards. I'm like, if you go to a Korean barbecue, a Korean restaurant, it's all about, you know, getting a little bit of this. It's not like some other countries, you know, when you share your food with someone, it's like, oh no, I'm like, that's not, I'm like.
Yeah. And we love talking, we love drinking. Yeah, overall, like the vibe, the whole kind of cultural ambience, I feel like, is quite similar.
Then going back to the Camino, how do you remember your first Camino with your family? How was that experience?
It was, like, I had no expectations, and I was going with my dad, so there was no kind of, like, fear as well. I was just like, okay, they're saying we're going somewhere, I'm going somewhere. Like, I didn't think
someone is paying, someone is taking me, there's no options.
Exactly. But at the end, like, it was great. And like, I remember actually the first day, like, my dad keeps talking about this because it was in Astorga that I started, and apparently that's like one of the like peak kind of we were going up, and he was saying, you know, like, Chenny, like, the camino apparently is life, and you know, life is this hard. And I was like, life is this easy? Like, it's just a little walk up the mountain. And so I don't know, I felt like from day one, for me and my dad, like, we're both very intuitive kind of spiritual people, so I guess it was just a lovely experience to do it that young, but also with my whole family. Yeah, it's like something that I will always cherish, you know. But interestingly, it's been a super different experience doing it then and doing it now. It feels like a whole different camino, like a whole different journey, you know.
That's one of the beauties of the Camino Frances, and I think any camino, you know, if you do it again, it's going to be so different because of the people, the places. Even if you stop in every little, you know, place that you stop the first time, if you follow the same stages, the camino is going to be so different because of the people that you go walk on, and also because the way you are in that moment. No, so I guess you're doing with your family, you were more talking with your family, but you also open to others, as you know, when you do it after that by yourself, so it was totally different.
But that's the thing. I think obviously the people change and things change, but I think what makes Camino different every time you do it is because you change so much and your perspective on the Camino changes.
Really.
And really, I think the Camino is just a reflection of your perspective. Like, when I was 14, I didn't think about that. I was just eating bocadillos and I was just like, oh, this is so many tapas they're giving me. And it was more just about like, yeah, having fun. But this time round, the Camino felt so spiritual and just like, it taught me so many lessons that I feel like it's something that I want to keep going back to in life. Not very often, but every time I feel like it's a new chapter, I think it's like a good way to kind of ground myself again and see things from a clearer perspective.
And as a 14 years old from living in Barcelona, the ghost in the Camino with your family, how do you take it, and what would you take to other families? I'm like, because probably nowadays, you know, it's if you tell to your 14-year-old kid, you're going to the Camino, he's going to say, no way, Jose. I'm like, I'm not going with my old brother, my old dad, to something that is supposed to be fun. I'm like, that's a bummer. What do you take from the Camino as a younger age?
I mean, it depends on every kid. Like, I really liked it because I've always liked the mountains and being in the nature. And I've always grown up in like Barcelona, which is not like a city with like huge skyscrapers, but I've always liked the idea of being with the cows and like in the mountains. So it wasn't like hard to convince me, but I don't know. Like, are you asking like how you would convince a 14-year-old, or are you asking like how?
What do you think from that experience? You know, for a lot of people, maybe a dad or a 14-year-old that is listening, you know, some of them will think maybe the Camino is something that you do when you're in college with your friends, or maybe, you know, high school that day when you're with some friends, but not something that you will do with your family, because it's such a, you know, experience. But in your case, you were saying, you know, that I believe it's every time you do the Camino, you know, if you do it with your partner, if you do it with your kids, or if you do it by yourself, you get something different. If you tell me which one I prefer, I think the Camino, the highest and the most complete experience is by yourself. But I think all the other ones give different things, and they're really, you know, enriching. So what do you think as doing the Camino with your family, and also jumping into your brother that was already 15 days by himself?
I don't know. I just really enjoyed it. Like, there was, I had no feelings of like, oh, my family is lame, I want to be with my friends, or, oh, this is lame, I want to be in the city. No feelings like that at all. It was like a new experience. I didn't know what to expect. I had good food every day, and the beds were a bit wonky, but it was fun. It was like, oh, like, I'm in summer camp, or I'm with like a bunch of these people, and I love talking to, like, meeting very diverse people. You know, like, it's not my other 14-year-olds, I met like 20-year-olds or 40-year-olds. So that was really cool as a 14-year-old. And then seeing my brother, like, honestly though, I do remember, like, cause he would have like his Korean gang. Like, he would have like all those school 20-year-old university students, and I'd be kind of like stuck with my dad and my mom. So I'd kind of like escape them, and I'd want to be like with the cool kids, you know, like they're 20-year-old. So I remember like trying to like walk really fast and be like, I'm going to catch up with my brother so I can be with him.
And, you know, one of the things that right now, as we were talking, you know, before going live, it was the you know, Koreans, most of them, they don't speak Spanish at all. And neither Spanish do speak, you know, Korean, or English is usually not as good as supposed to be. So how was, you know, being right in between cultures, between Spaniards and Koreans? Because a lot of people will show you in the Camino and will think, oh, look, another Korean. No, I'm like, I'm speaking perfect Spanish. So I will guess, but you have some fun experience with that.
I mean, I think a lot of people were very like it took them by a surprise, you know, like, because they would obviously expect me to, because I look Korean, they would expect me to have come directly from Korea, but then I'd like speaking the Spanish and they'd be like, whoa. So I think the Spanish people were really welcoming with that. They found it like really fun and interesting that I was part of their culture, although I was from a very different culture. And then the Koreans, I think they were just like really fascinated as well, just like, what's a Korean doing in Spain? Like, usually you see a lot of Korean Americans or from other places, but not too many Korean Spanish. And for me, like, honestly, being in the Camino, I was telling you before, it really feels like the essence of like the melting pot of Spanish and Korean culture together. Like, I've never found any other place that has both Spanish and Korean people, like a lot of them in one place, you know? Like, you go to like restaurants and you will see menus in Korean. Like, now nowadays in Barcelona you also see menus in Korean, but like, still I feel like, yeah, Camino is just like it really made me feel home, because when we were talking about the identity crisis, like, when I'm in Korea, I miss Spain. When I'm in Spain, I miss Korea, right? It's always like I belong everywhere, but I feel lonely at the same time. Mm-hmm. And in the Camino, it was like having two worlds just collide in one place in like a very neutral nature setting. Yeah. So it really made me feel home.
Do you have any situation where like someone was, you know, like when you speak a language and you go to a country that, and they think that you don't speak the language, you know, it happens to me sometimes in the US, and like people will be speaking Spanish, you know, Mexicans, and they didn't think that you speak Spanish, and suddenly they're like, and you're like, oh, hablo español perfectamente, soy español, and like, what? You're not gringo? Did anything like that happen to you when you were like going to the albergues or to restaurants, or even, you know, to Spanish, that suddenly were saying, oh, look at this Korean, it's like, hey, hablo español.
Yeah.
Anything like that happen?
Yeah, all the time. But it was more like it was never like a bad surprise. It was always like, oh, amazing, you know? Yeah.
That's so funny. And then, so you walk the Camino with your family, then suddenly you find in a point in your life that you decided it was your time to walk the Camino. What happened, and how did you decide that it was, you know, the time to go back and this time do it on your own?
Yeah, so I had graduated from university, and like basically all my life I've been studying, right? Kindergarten, middle school, high school, university. And
Now you get to do a master's or keep in studying.
Exactly. And like a lot of my friends are doing masters, and I was also thinking like, do I have to do a master? But I don't really know what I want to do. So then rather than just kind of, I just thought, you know, I think it's like a good time of my life where I have time. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of money, but Camino doesn't take money. And I'm healthy. And I didn't think much about it. Honestly, I booked the train 1 week before. So I decided to do the Camino 1 week before doing it. And also, I wanted to do a Camino del Norte. But then I saw like the weather forecast, and it said it was like more like less people, and it was like my first Camino alone. So I was like, okay, let's keep it safe and let's go with the Camino Frances, which I changed the day before. So I didn't know I was doing the Camino Frances until the day before. So it was like I'm not very much of a planner. I'm very spontaneous because I don't like to overthink. So I was like, I don't know what to do with my life now that I've been studying all my life and everything was laid out for me. Now there's no curriculum that I have to follow. Now I have to decide things by myself about my life. So I was like, okay, I'll just go into the Camino and let's see. But not much thought to it, yeah.
Did you ask your brother about his Camino or anything about your dad or about the planning or nothing at all? It was just, you know, I'm going. I don't care.
I'm going. I don't care. Yeah, definitely. It was just, yeah. I just packed my stuff and then I left.
Do you have your pack ready? Do you have a backpack, gear? Was something that you used to hike and go for walks? Or was something that you were like, eh, I need to go to Decathlon and get all my gear?
No, I didn't buy much stuff. It was just everything that I had from when I was 14. So I used the same bag. I used the same clothes because I was already 12 when I was 14. So, I mean, obviously, I did have to buy a couple of things from Decathlon, but the majority I had already. But I do must say that I did overpack. Like,
we always overpack in the first time.
Yeah.
Even like, myself, I've been backpacking all my life. And when I arrived to my home in Pamplona, I left like a lot of things in Pamplona from my first time.
I think it was like the fear of going alone and just like, okay, what if? And you just start putting a bunch of things. And it actually, it's one of my favorite, like this girl, she told me when I was on the Camino, she told me that the bigger your bag is, the bigger your fear is. I think that is a like quote that really hit me because it's so true. It was just like, okay, what if, or just in case, you know, and like all of these things that were just actually weighing me down. And if I actually needed something, like I could get it. So
that's the beauty of the Camino Francés. Like you can buy anything almost any day. And if not, as I always say to everybody, if you're from Spain, you probably have Amazon Prime. So get it sent to the next albergue. And if you're not from Spain, get Amazon Prime for a month. It's free. That's what I do usually when I go to any other country. I get an Amazon Prime just in case. And if you need anything. But I think that's the thing. You know, the first time you go into the unknown, like the zone, and like you try to overpack and just to protect yourself for the just in case. I'm like, you know, it's not that much. But at the end, those little things are the ones that keep adding. And as you get, you know, wiser in the Camino, I will say. And like right now, I just bought my new backpack. It's 900 grams. You start counting every little gram. Yeah. Not because you need it, because at the end, you know, a lot of people, they talk about the 10% rule of the weight. And that's just, you know, it's a good measure. But I see people that is super big and they can carry them. Like when I'm backpacking, I carry 12, 15 kilos. If I have to carry a 10 and a stove and everything. In the Camino at the end, I'm like, I carry a stove all the way to Finisterre on my first Camino. Mm-hmm. And a pack of dry spaghetti that I never cooked until Finisterre, just because I had to, and I wasn't going to throw it away.
I threw most of my things away. Honestly, no, I didn't even throw them. They just got lost. But, you know,
that's just you, the kind of person that lost things in the Camino.
yeah, just like every day something would disappear. I went with like 3 pants, and I ended up with like no pants at the end, and so I had to like buy pants. How do you even lose pants, you know? Anyway.
I lose a t-shirt. Shorts, so I feel you. No, I'm that kind of like all over the place. I'm super tidy and everything, but when I'm out, I try to put things and because I'm doing something or talking with someone, I'm like, I lost my wallet 3 times on my first Camino.
No,
it always got back to me.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's no, but strange. You know what you're saying about like Amazon Prime? I don't think you even need Amazon Prime. Like,
no, I'm like, just in case if you need something really specific, but in the Camino with Decathlon and with the stores, and every village has a little store. But if you're doing a different Camino, you know, like the Via La Plata or Camino with less places, I'm like, the great thing of Amazon Prime, if you need anything, you can get it in 24 hours on the next albergue. So if you're really used to, you know, like I say, let's say you always go with Hokas and your Hokas broke and you need a Hokas. I'm like, maybe you're not going to find it in a little village in the middle of the meseta. Or you need a sleeping bag, or you need, you know, for example, when I was walking from Lourdes to Pamplona, I lost the charger for my watch. That's not something that you find anywhere. Right. And also was COVID, everything was closed. So I got on Amazon, get it sent to the next day. Oh. Easy peasy. That's a last minute result. But again, in the Camino Santiago and the Frances, you can go with no pants and walk the Camino with no problem.
Yeah.
And how was the arrival? Suddenly here you are in Barcelona, you walked the Camino a long time ago with your family, and suddenly you appear in Saint-Jean-de-Pied-de-Port, France, by yourself. How was the feeling?
I think, well, no, actually, no, I arrived in Pamplona. No.
The best city in the world.
Yes.
Yeah, I arrived. Train, no, probably with Barcelona.
Yeah, and then there was no bus back to Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. So then I stayed one night, and then I went to Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port to start. Okay. And in that moment, my parents were like, just start from Pamplona. Who cares? And I was like, no, I need to start from Saint-Jean.
And I agree with you. It makes a big difference to start from Saint-Jean.
Yeah. And I arrived there, and I didn't have much time to, like, I don't think I was very, like, emotionally overwhelmed, like, oh, I'm doing the Camino. It was more just, like, because the first day was so beautiful, like, you know, when you go up the, go around
such
the
Such a change. But, I'm like, Saint-Jean is so French, he's so different, so kind of, it has a little different vibe.
Yeah, the town is beautiful as well, but, like, the mountainscape was so beautiful. So, yeah, I was, I think I was just, like, enjoying nature to its fullest, and, yeah. Just having a really good time and really feeling like the mountainous area, you know, like, because when it's the first day, it's like the Pyrenees. So feeling that. And then the first day was okay because I followed the crowd. I went to until
Rontesvalles. Did you feel lost on the first day? Because, you know, for a lot of people, when they arrive to Saint-Jean by themselves, it's a little like lonely or strange because you see all these people, but trying to connect with them and... How was the feeling of, did you find someone to talk to right away? Did you create a like a Camino family right away in Saint-Jean, or was more on the walking day?
No, like right away from the first day, I met so many French people, like all these French people coming to my life. But yeah, like since day one, I never, honestly, I don't think at any moment in Camino, I felt lonely. I felt overwhelmed more than lonely. Also, because I spoke Spanish and I spoke like, quite a different, like a variety of language. I think it was a really easy way for me to connect with people because I'd look Korean and then I'd be speaking to Spanish with other Spanish people. And then like more Spanish people would come to me and be like, I love, ¿por qué hablas español? So it was like a great conversation starter. And then the Koreans would come to me and be like, oh, why do you speak Spanish? And then like, it would be like a whole like debate on why.
You know, I always said you need to put in the Camino an Italian in your family so he can cook because, you know, they always love to cook. And if you do one day your pasta wrong and they will be all over the place, you always need to put someone that is a doctor or a nurse. But I will say you always need to put a Chinese in your Camino. I'm like, because you're the connection with the Americans, with the Koreans, with the Spanish. Like, you can talk to, I will say, 100%, 99.9% of the people on the Camino. You know, because sometimes with English, you can only reach some people. Because if you don't speak Chinese or Japanese or Korean, I'm like, that's going to be out of your league if you don't speak English. And some of them, they don't even speak English. Most Koreans do, but still. But for Spaniards, that English, you know, you've been living here. Or English, for a lot of people, it's not that easy or they don't feel that comfortable talking. They know how to read and they know how to communicate, but they're not used to. So with you speaking Spanish, English, Korean, even French or whatever, I'm like, I'm like, nah, 100% people on the Camino.
Yeah. I think knowing languages was really helpful connecting with people. But yeah, never felt lonely. Yeah.
And like how people interact, I'm like, were you the translator in some groups? Did you find any like fun situation, someone fall in love and you have to be there just to translate or something?
No one falling in love around me.
Oh.
Well, I kind of did, so that's fine.
We'll go into that later.
But I did have to translate a lot. Like, I was translating all the time, most of the times. And, like, a lot of people would just come up to me for help. But I was... But, you know, like, I... My side job is being an interpreter. So it was just kind of, like, a continuation of, like, what I would usually do. So it was just... It was a bit annoying sometimes because I was like, oh, it kind of feels like I'm working. But then not at all as well. It was just... Nice to
I'm out. Having this great idea of putting you and doing like a monthly or bi-weekly like reel with you, like talk, you know, in Korean, and we do like the basic questions for, you know, about the Camino and everything, and we can do it on the Camino people, like you and I chatting, and you will be the Korean translator. That'll be fun.
Korean ambassador of Camino.
Yeah, like the ambassador of the Camino. The Camino people of Korean ambassador. And it was mostly what, like getting to the albergue restaurants. I'm like, help finding, you know, hospital? What kind of situations do you think that you were most helpful? People were more lost.
I think it was like reserving albergues. Like they would want me to make a call to ask about something, or maybe hospital as well, like translating texts, or like how to find something, or me calling someone. Like they would be like, can you please talk to this person? And be like, okay.
Talk in Spanish or English. You talk.
Yeah.
You
do it. yeah. But mostly that.
What do you think is the biggest problem when Koreans come to Spain? Like, do they use a travel agency? How they travel to the Camino? Are they going to albergues? Going, you know, like mostly into the unknown? They make reservations?
I think there are quite a bit of like travel agencies, but honestly, I think now there's so much information out there about Camino de Santiago that, you know how we said like when it's something unknown, we have fear, but there's so much information that people, I think, come alone, like, comfortably, and there's so many books, so many, like, YouTube videos, and also, like, in Korea, they have their own, like, online forum called Naver.
Yeah.
Over there. Naver. Yeah. NAVER.com. And over there, there's, like, a lot of, like, community forums where they talk about the Camino, so it's very helpful, and like in between them, they really know where to go and what to do and how to navigate through. Like, yeah.
Because at the end, it's a big change. I'm like, not even, you know, people that don't know, sometimes I'm like, Koreans, they don't even use Visa or MasterCard. I'm like, you have your own pay apps and, you know, the language, the mobile phone and everything is such a big change. So, so you can really handy for all those people that were lost.
Yes. But no, I don't, honestly, like, I think for Koreans, Camino isn't like a very difficult journey.
No.
It's not like the unknown or anything. Yeah.
I don't think for anybody, I'm like, this is not like going to the PCT or, you know, to the,
exactly,
the Everest or to the Alps. I'm like, this is just, I'm like, it's a great walk. And I think that's the beauty, part of the beauty of the Camino Francés, that anyone from anywhere can come. Even if you don't speak the language or whatever, I'm like, you're going to find a place to sleep, you're going to find food, you're going to feel safe. That's kind of one of the beauties of the Camino Francés.
Yeah, definitely.
So as you start walking, finally you are in the Camino just by yourself. How was the feeling of being back in the Camino, but this time, you know, without your family? Now it was your Camino.
I really felt like I was in my essence. Like, I felt so much love from everywhere, and like, I don't know, like also being in Barcelona, being with my family, with my group of friends, there's like an idea that they have of me, and there's like expectations of how I am and my persona. Mm-hmm. And so unconsciously, or like, I don't know, like without much thinking, I maybe acted out in some ways in like kind of under their expectation. Whereas Camino, it's just like you're literally like in the middle of kind of nowhere. And these are people that you will never see again, possibly. And so I was just like, just really feeling like a child and just being really just authentic to myself. And that felt really liberating and freeing. Yeah. Just like not having to perform or meet anyone's expectations and just being myself. And yeah, freeing, I guess.
You know, a lot of times when I do the marketing classes, I do marketing for young entrepreneurs, I'm like, I told you, know, you talk to your parents one way, you use what kind of language, you use what kind of communication, you know, because we have that kind of like social rules, and when you go in your job, you have to follow the rules. But in the Camino, as you say, sometimes because you don't care about the person that is in front of you, because probably you're gonna never see him again, sometimes because that's the place where you can kind of like take off your mask and be yourself, because you're putting that persona. And sometimes just because the Camino takes to that point where like, I don't give a fuck really what the other thoughts about me, or what did he, if I'm dressed wrong or right, I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah. But that's the thing, like, you'll never know if like what, like everyone's dressed equal over there, you know, everyone's dressed in like a hiking thing. And so I think that's really like a cool social equalizer. You don't have like
this kind of,
okay, like maybe they're better than me, or maybe they're, you know, like there's nothing like that. It's just such a friendly kind of pure interaction that gets created from there. You're all sleeping in bunk beds, you're all eating bread and pasta or whatever, and so Yeah, just very freeing and liberating, but and like authentic connections I felt between the people.
But a lot of people, one of the things when we talk about the Camino is the Camino family. When did you find out your Camino? Did you find a Camino family that you walk kind of like the whole Camino with them, or were you just jumping all over the place? Because I'm like with you, I'm like, you can be in every family in the Camino.
Yeah, like in the beginning, I was more like jumping from group to group and more individual because I was also kind of finding my own pace in the walk. One day I would do like a lot and then I'd get injured and then I have to get like a couple of days of rest. But then like by the second week or like the 1.5 week mark, I found like I kept meeting these French guys. So we did the whole Camino together. Like we were, it was
Oh, Le Franz.
Victor from Paris, Alex from Lyon, Ryan from Brittany, Jack from Belgium, and Ronan from Toulouse.
So
And
6-1
yeah, well, five. Oh, and then
after one.
there was another French guy, but I forgot his name. And he wasn't really like in the gang anyway. He was kind of like going on and off. But with those like four or five people, especially with Alex, Victor and Jack, I adore them. And like I went to see them actually after the Camino. Like I went to Lyon to see Alex and I
Oh,
went
so Alex is the one.
Oh, no. No, it was just like we had like a deep connection. But
Yeah.
now he's living his life and I'm living mine. We still
That's it.
we say like Merry Christmas. But
That's it.
yeah.
That's the Camino.
Yeah. But I also went to see Victor in Paris. Well, I didn't go see him, but I was in Paris and I saw him. And we still talk and it's just like it's lovely to meet them because sometimes like these beautiful memories, it's like if you're the only person that you have these memories. I kind of get scared that maybe it was all a dream, but if you have like other people that live together and we can talk about it, it's like it was real, it's not only in my head and I'm going crazy. So it was nice to just like reflect on the or like look back on the nostalgic kind of emotion around Camino.
How was the, then suddenly you arrived to Astorga, the place where you started with your father. How was the getting to that point and getting those caminos connected? How did you feel?
I didn't recognize it in the beginning.
Really?
Yeah, until I got to Ponferrada, I think, which is not far from Astorga. But I was like, this looks familiar. But then I don't know. It was so long time. It was such a long time ago that I didn't recognize it. But it also felt very different, the walk. I was like, it felt like it was much more harder when I was 14. And I was like, this is just like a walk. Now I'm so used to it. Like, I've been walking for the past 3 weeks. So I don't know. Yeah, like honestly, I didn't really compare my first Camino to my second Camino that much. It wasn't like reliving my first Camino, it was a whole new thing for me. Yeah. I see them quite
Interesting.
separate. Yeah.
So did you have, as you were walking the last fine word, memories from the Camino with your dad and your brother pop up every once in a while, or not really?
Not really. No.
You were
Yeah.
living your Camino.
Yeah. I was living my Camino.
And how was, because one of the things that we talk later, and it's one of the things that pops in every pilgrim is the arrival into Santiago. As you get closer, you get closer to your goal, but also the end of the Camino. How was the feeling to get in there?
Well, I knew that my parents came to Santiago de la Compostela to greet me. And my friend Jose from Galicia, he's from Santiago, but he studied with me in Barcelona. So he also came because, and so I knew they were expecting me, but I was entering, like me and Alex, we were finishing the Camino together. And so I just remember just like my mom kept calling, like, when are you arriving? When are you arriving to like the cathedral?
Rota.
Yeah, and I remember just like trying to go as slow as possible. And we were stopping like every 5 minutes around like the trees and the benches because we kind of didn't want it to end, I think. Because it's like ironic, isn't it? It's like this is what you were walking towards. But then when that actual moment of like completing a mission or a goal comes, it really was more about the journey and the process than actually getting there. And so once you kind of get close to there, you kind of don't want to get there because it's all going to end. So, yeah.
It's one of the few times in life that you have a goal, and as you get closer to the goal, you don't want to reach the goal. And like any other way in life, you know, your job, whatever, your college, every time as you get closer to the goal, I'm like, you are, you know, oh, yeah, it's time, I want to do it. You know, you go to race, you finish your master's degree, your college degree, and you want to finish. Mm-hmm. When you get closer to Santiago, that's the moment that you realize that it's about the journey.
Yeah.
About the destination.
Yeah.
And how was also suddenly you are with your Camino family, but suddenly your other family, your real family is in Santiago. So how was the mixing both and staying in Santiago? Did you stay in Santiago for a couple of days? Did you walk into Mosilla or Fisterra, or was that, you know, bye-bye Camino family, hello, my family?
No, like it was actually, I stayed in Santiago for like 2 days, I think, or no, just one night. But my family, like I had lunch with them and then I was like, nice seeing you, and it was lovely to see them, but I want to be with them.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, because I was like, you know, it's probably the last time I'm going to see them, and I really want to, like, spend time with them. So they were enjoying, I mean, Santiago, like, the city anyway.
Yeah.
And so I went straight back to my French family and just try to be with them as much as possible. Because, like, honestly, I felt so home and so safe with them. Like, they really made me feel like a family. No, like, we were a family. So it was really, really hard to say bye to them. Yeah.
And, you know, for many people, one of the things that, you know, say the Camino changed you. Some other people will say the Camino just, you know, gives you perspective. What did it change in your life? You know, if you have to say, you know, from the Cheney that walks in Saint John to the Cheney that finishes in Santiago de Compostela, what changed or what?
I think I'd go with the second group. It didn't change me as a person in its essence. I think I've always been the way I am in the essence. Mm-hmm. But I think over the years, the essence also gained a lot of like layers. And I think Camino kind of like peels those layers and reveals the essence. And I think what helps me from perspective now, having done the Camino, is that during the Camino, I learned a lot of, there were like a lot of reoccurring patterns of like certain problems that would come up in during the walk that were kind of like a metaphor to the problems in my life. For example, overpacking, like always like trying to take on too much, or on the second day I was like over pushing myself, overworking myself. So I did like, I probably did like 35 kilometers or 40 kilometers after Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. So that was like a really heavy charge on my knees. So I had to rest for 3 days or something. And so at the end, I was slower than if I would have gone slower, you know? And so those kind of lessons, it just really like reflected and like surfaced to the level, like the kind of negative patterns that I have to work on myself. And so those kind of tools, I just kind of use it in my life, day-to-day life. So for example, maybe I want to take on so many projects, but then I see them as like these little objects that I'm putting in my bag, and I think maybe I shouldn't be charging myself so much, or maybe I want to do certain things really fast, but then I think to myself, maybe I'm going to hurt myself again by doing things so fast, and I need to take it slower, and that's going to be longer in the longer run as well. Like faster in the longer run. So I think it's just these like little tools and kind of lessons in life that I can reapply, but I don't think it's changed like the essence of who I am. Yeah. I think it's just know me better.
The Camino doesn't change you, just give you time to get the real you pop out or to think about things that happen and to, you know, just give you more time. And the, every day, I think we don't have time with ourselves. I think the Camino is one of the things that gave us, you know, time to be with yourself and realize what things you need to work or what things work or what doesn't. So if you have to say something for everyone that is listening, you know, how to interact with Koreans, because sometimes for us, the whole Korean is a little weird. There are these guys that they are all covered with umbrellas, with the hats, with perfect skin. We have all of this, but coming from a Korean Spanish that, you know, you have all your international life, what would you think that, you know, we can work together? How, what can we approach? What can we learn from each other?
I think Koreans, like, the difference between that I feel between like more Europeans and like Koreans is that Europeans, I think they're very easy to approach. In the metro, in the cafe, it's not too hard to talk to them. But I think it's harder to really become like bonded with them, like from heart to heart. Whereas in Korea, I feel like it's harder to do that perhaps initial contact. But then I think once they think they're your people, like you're their people, they really embrace you. And so I think it's this, and also like within Asian countries, I think Koreans are very open. They're not like very, how do you say, like defensive, I think. I don't think they're very defensive people. I think they're very open people. And especially people in the Camino, I think they come with that idea that, you know, it's a place where you meet people. It's a place where you have to be open. And so I think if you just take the courage, I don't think a Korean, I think it's more likely that you could take the courage to talk to them. Yeah, approach them.
So a Korean will never approach you in the Camino and start talking
to
you?
No, no.
I mean, in general.
No, but I think they could be more shy. I mean, obviously, they're in a whole new country as well, you know? And if you're a Spanish person, I guess you're more comfortable with the location and like the paisaje, like the
Their English is horrible, most of them.
Yeah,
we don't have that. But I guess, if you know to get the first approach, you know, sometimes I'm like, I live in the north and we are close environment. If you come here to Pamplona, if you don't have friends, it's much harder than if you go to Barcelona, to Madrid. So I guess, you know, we need to embrace our politics. And for us in the north, you know, once you are part of our community, you are one more that you will have a friend forever. But it's true that as a first approach, we are really close. I'm like, you don't go to a bar and you start talking with someone, you know, in a normal day by day. I'm like, at the Camino you do, I'm like, you can sit down. But here, for example, in Pamplona, I will never have a coffee and sit down with someone else to have a coffee that I don't know. As for maybe in Madrid, you know, you go sit down with someone, I'm like, can I sit here? But not in Pamplona, for example.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, I never knew.
And what would you say with the people, for the ones that are listening, you know, to us to, you know, to take the step forward and walk the Camino? What would you tell them, you know, from a girl that went with their parents and went by herself? What do you think the Camino has to offer to them?
I think it has, what it has to offer is what you need in that moment in life. Like, it offers the lessons, the people, the thoughts that you need in that specific time, context, and kind of mental health, or not mental health, but like the place that you are in your life in that moment. It's going to be different when you do it when you're 50, because you might have a different job, you might have a different relationship with yourself, with other people. But every time, I think it's just, the Camino is you, you know? It's just, it's literally you're walking through yourself. And so I think that's what it has to offer.
So deep and so true, I agree. The Camino is walking through you. Like, there's no other thing. At the end, the Camino is just a place where anything that needs to happen will happen. And sometimes, you know, you just need to be injured and slow down, because that's the lesson that you need. Sometimes some people need to go home because that's the lesson that you need at the moment. And, you know, the worst thing you can do from the Camino is create expectations, watch too many YouTube videos, trying to learn too much. Just be open to the Camino.
Yeah, just don't force anything. Just take that whatever happens is the right thing that was meant to happen, and just disenjoy. Yeah.
So true. Thank you so much. And final question. Is there any camino now? First one with your family, second by yourself. Is there any camino in the future time or not yet?
No, like definitely. I think after 3 years, I want to do it again. Maybe a different camino. Again, alone.
Maybe Korea? Maybe Korea camino? Did you do all that?
Yeah. But I'd like to do it alone. But I think at some point, I would like to, like, I think if I want to get married to someone, I would want to do the camino with them. I think it's like a good
first test. You need to find that person.
Okay, but
I agree with you 100%. If I marry someone, we are doing the camino first. We are not waiting. I agree with you. The caminos will be mandatory when you finish high school, when you finish college, and before you marry someone. If you gonna stay together for a whole month walking, you are meant to each other.
Yeah.
Now you just need to find someone that agree with you on that one.
Yeah. And then with kids, and then when I'm retired, plenty of caminos ahead of me.
But don't wait until you are retired. You know, I think one of the things that a lot of people, at least in Spain, they do is, oh, I will walk the camino when I retire. If you don't have the time, go for a week. If you don't have the time, go for weekends, but don't wait.
No, of course not. But I'm saying, like, it's another.
Yeah, I mean, your case, you already walk too many, but when we retire, I don't even know if you and I are going to retire after, you know, the base we go, maybe. Who knows where we will be when we retire. But anyway, thank you so much. I hope to meet again and, you know, maybe in Pamplona, maybe Barcelona, maybe in Madrid again in Fitur. Mm-hmm. And of course, we will be in touch and talk much more about caminos.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me and this lovely conversation.
And as we always say, buen camino, ultra ya.